Support Podnuts by going to podnuts.com/Amazon. It'll take you straight to Amazon, do your normal shopping, but with every purchase, you'll be supporting Podnuts. Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 307. Again, if you don't know by now, this is a show about computer repair. Where we have a computer repair technician come on the show, we grill him. No, actually, we don't do that. He actually volunteers information, tips, techniques, methods that he uses in his shop or business to help you guys become better PC technicians. And that's what we do. It's just that simple. We read your emails at the end, and we do voicemails after that. Joining us again is another, well, not again. This is his first time. But again, we have a good computer repair technician on the show, Brian Houston from ComputerGuyQCA.com. Brian, thanks for joining us today, man.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, anytime. Tell us a little bit about yourself, being a first-time Podnutzer.
Well, I live in the heartland. I live in Bettendorf, Iowa, and I kind of fell into computer repair. I taught school. That's what my training is in, is teaching school. And I taught for 13 years, and nine of them here in Iowa. And we had an IT guy there at the school. It was a small private school, and he was there and decided we all needed to be networked. And so we ended up with 25 computers on a network and a server running server 2003 or whatever. And then he left. And so I kind of got the job of handling all of that. And I was teaching a basic computer at the time and teaching typing to the high schoolers. So I realized that I really liked that way more than teaching. And people in the in the school and in the church that I went to started asking me to fix their computers. And I said, I'm going to take out an ad. And so I did. That was about 7 years ago. And, I just kind of grew from there. So it's just me. And I work out of my home. But I have a really awesome boss, and he also, he suggested to me that I set up a workbench in my office at my full-time job where I do bookkeeping, and, I'm allowed to work on one computer at a time during the workday, as long as I'm getting all my other stuff done. So it's pretty sweet arrangement.
Damn. He lets you do other work in his shop, yep. In his place.
Yep.
As long as you get your other work done. That's pretty awesome.
Right, because he's a very smart man. He knows that the majority of what I do, like probably most techs, it seems to me the majority of what I do is virus removal.
Right.
And there's a lot of hurry up and wait. I mean, you click next, and then there's nothing to do again for another 20 minutes or whatever, or hours, depending on what you're doing. And so I just have a bench behind me, and then and once I discovered LogMeIn, I said, well, I'm not even going to spin around to that bench anymore. I just put LogMeIn on there, and I have dual screens on my desk. And so I just go over to my other screen and click next. I mean, it's very, very little time that I'm, have to devote to it because of that.
Yeah. Well, for viruses. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, the stuff that where I have to get into it and do the hardware stuff, I save that for home. I don't try to do that there because right. I don't want to take advantage, of that, but
right. But that's still great. That's a great arrangement.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty cool.
So how's business going for you on your computer repair shop? And what are you doing to advertise and stuff?
It comes in waves. I mean, it's always all over the place. You know, the beginning of the year, I thought, man, if every month is like January, it was going to be awesome, you right. know, but then it just kind of goes up and down and up and down. And, so what I do is I started out with an ad in the Yellow Book, and then I added an ad in the Dex One Real Yellow Pages, which actually seemed to me was doing better.
Right.
So I had both of those things going, and it's still hit miss, you know, because they have to pick my ad out of a whole bunch.
Now, how did you do in Yellow Book? I had horrible success with the Yellow Book.
I did Yellow Book for a couple of years. That's all I had. And it was fine.
Okay.
It was fine to be honest with you. I tell people this not because the income was so great, but because it was so so poor what I was making when I first started teaching school. I was making 12 grand a year as a school teacher in Georgia. And I made that much from computer jobs on the side from my Yellow Book ad.
Really?
Like a couple of years ago and last few years. So
did you do a a quarter page ad? What did you do?
Like an inch and a half ad.
Inch and a half ad.
Yeah.
What did you put in it?
I put a computer guy, available evenings and weekends, patient friendly service, reasonable rates. And I put, we do virus removal because everybody calls me, do you remove viruses? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, well, I'm just going to tell them in the ad so they don't even have to ask.
Right.
And I put my phone number. So, you know, and patient friendly and local service. To me, that's key, is that they know I'm a local guy. So, and that was it. And, but then I discovered Podnuts, and, I now have a website that's, you know, that, designed using the, tech site builder and, an AdWords campaign. And that's only been going for maybe a month or so. And I'm not getting a lot of clicks. And to be fair, I haven't really gone in and tweaked it at all.
Yeah.
I just use the, you know, the standard, you know, the keywords that from the list. So to be fair, I haven't really tweaked it at all. So, you know, I need to give it more of a chance and really kind of fine tune that. But, I anticipate that the longer that is in place, that the better it'll do. So,
yeah, you know, when I was doing AdWords, the AdWords I set up, you know, for the tech site builder, I wasn't getting a lot of clicks either, but the clicks I did get would call. So I was only getting a few clicks a day. I don't know how much you're getting, but and I've had guys who had really good success with the tech site builder AdWords portion and other guys who aren't. And the guys that I noticed that aren't, a lot of them are in areas that are so competitive, they have to bid like $4, $5, $6 per click. And I was only bidding two in my area. So either things have changed or it's very location based, so there is tweaking that might need to be involved. But at least, I wish I could say 100%, give you like, oh, you 100% of the time this thing works. But I do notice that there is variations across the board. So.
Well, and I happen upon a card from Google that gave me $100 in free AdWords credit.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, I don't even care, you know, for the first $100, it's, you know, that's fine. You know, so I'm kind of riding that right now. And, you know, I'll tweak it as I have time, but, you know, I'm not too worried about it. And, okay. and the bottom line is the other guy, local shops are not doing it because I do searches and they're not showing up.
Very good. Very good. Well, that's an advantage for you.
That's what I do for advertising. And then word of mouth is huge and repeat business. I got a word of mouth call today. They'll be dropping their computer. And the other thing is people drop their computers off to me down at my work, come right in the front door, and I go get them and talk to them and, you know, take the computer back to my shop or to my office. But so I've got someone dropping their computer off tomorrow for virus removal, and that was word of mouth, you know. So if you take care of people and really treat them the way you want to be treated, your name will get out.
Very good advice.
That's key.
Yes, I agree with you on that. Always been a big fan. Great customer service. We'll hook you up every time.
Right.
All right, what else do you want to go over? I know you prepared some stuff.
Well, that was kind of leading into my next thing I want to talk about is just my work philosophy as far as computer guy goes.
Okay.
Which is you know, the first thing is to treat other people the way I would want to be treated, you know. And I tell people, you know, there are times where I'll walk in and I'll do something and it's real quick, and I decided I'm not going to charge them anything. You know, I had one of these last week where I'd already made some money from this customer helping them set up their wireless printer, and they called me the next week and said they couldn't get online. And so I went in and all I needed to do was power cycle their modem. And so I, you know, this is an elderly couple, and, you know, so I power cycle the modem, plug it 30 seconds, plug it back in, everything worked, you know. And he starts pulling out his wallet, you know, what do I owe you? And, you know, I told him, I said, I got to be able to sleep at night, you know, so you don't owe me anything. And, you know, I could have made whatever, right then and there, but right. it also might have been the last time I made any money from them, and they wouldn't have given my name to anybody else. Whereas now they know that I'm not out to take advantage of them, and they will call me back if something goes wrong. As, right. you know, as long as they don't lose my card and, you know, forget my name or whatever, but they'll call me back and they'll tell other people about me. So, you know, that's the thing. You got to treat other people the way you want to be treated. And, you know,
how far out of the way did you have to go to get that, to go there?
Normally it's on the way. We have some flooding problems right now, so I had to, you know, take some detours, but it's pretty much on the way home. So, you know, it's just, like I told them, I got to be able to sleep at night. And if I walk out of there, charge them, you know, $60 or whatever for unplugging a cable and plugging it back in, I mean, that's just, I can't do that.
Did they offer you anything?
Yeah. He's pulling out his wallet, you know, and I just kind of shut him down. I didn't even want him to, you know, to get anything out. So, but yeah, he was ready to pay most definitely. So,
yeah.
And they appreciate it when you do that, you know, and that's one of my things is I don't feel like I have to be paid for every little thing I do. You know, if I have a customer that calls me up and wants to ask a simple question or whatever, I don't feel like I have to charge them for phone support or whatever. I mean, if I have to do something that's a big inconvenience to me, I'm probably going to charge them,
right,
you know,
right.
I mean, unless it's my fault, if it's my fault, you know, it's, you know, if I didn't do that something right the first time, then, you know, they're not going to pay for that. But,
that's why I started my business too. I agree with your philosophy. Yeah. As long as you're not driving 20 minutes out of the way.
Right.
You know what I mean? If it's on your way home, sure. If it only took you a couple minutes, that's huge for you, I think, in their eyes and as your business to do stuff like that. As long as you don't go broke doing it, it's actually more of it's such a great advantage to having that goodwill there.
Right. And I am also blessed because I drive a company car. And so I don't have to pay for a dime of gas or upkeep or anything on my vehicle. And the boss knows that it's the only car that I have other than, you know, my wife has her car. So
he lets you drive around doing jobs with that car. Damn, you got a nice boss, man. You have a nice boss. This guy.
Yeah, he buys lunch for the office every day. Every day. I'm not kidding you. Every day from different restaurants that are, you know, local restaurants. So it's a sweet, he knows I'll never, ever leave.
Right,
I'll never leave.
Right. That's pretty amazing.
So, yeah. But like I have a laptop over here. It's a Toshiba laptop and it's locked out. The BIOS password is set and it's a glitch with this particular one. Nobody set the password. It just happened. And the guy's going to have to send it back to Toshiba or whatever. And, you know, the guy's, you know, he's kind of had some hardships and so on. But and I told him, I said, I have a hard time charging somebody to tell them their computer is a doorstop. So I told him I'll probably charge you $20 for my time. Drop it off, pick it up and drop it off or whatever. If I find out that it's no good, you know, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take his laptop back to him and charge him $20 for a trip charge.
Right.
Sometimes I do that. Sometimes I don't. And I just kind of have to play it by ear. You know, whatever I feel like is.
Why don't you take the BIOS battery out?
Of the laptop?
Mm-hmm.
To be honest with you, I haven't done a lot of laptop stuff, and that's why I have your videos. I just bought them, and I'm working my way through them, and so I don't want to get into doing something that is more work than I know this guy can afford, you know?
Yeah.
So I just don't know what's involved with that, with doing that.
I think that will fix it, to be honest, but you know, like it's like you said, if you're not up to it, don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, how deep is the laptop battery?
They're usually as deep as you could go.
Yeah, see, I'm not going to do that because the guy has a hard time paying me $50.
Well, then why did you accept that job?
Because I thought that I was getting into just a reinstall of Windows.
Okay.
Which this guy's in a wheelchair and he's lost both of his legs. He's disabled, so I give him a break.
I got you.
But so I was going to do that, and I realized, oh, this is beyond that.
Yeah,
so.
That reinstall compared to a BIOS. Battery removal is major difference.
Right.
But
I was
just curious. So, I had to ask you that.
Yep. No worries. But so, you know, and here's the bad thing. This warranty on this particular issue ran out December 31st of 2010.
Oh, man.
So he's really bumming. But but the guy that lives across the street from me is a Toshiba tech at a certified Toshiba repair shop. So I'm going to talk to him and see what all is involved, see if he can take care of it.
Yeah. But I have to also say, sometimes the BIOS batteries are not buried It depends on the model. So I would try to find out where it is. Maybe you could pop off the memory cover and a battery is just sitting in your face. I don't know. But
that'd be too easy.
Never know.
Yeah, I'm gonna investigate that. But okay. I didn't want to. The other thing I try to do with people is I try not to overpromise and underdeliver. I try to underpromise and overdeliver.
Right.
So I didn't want to give this guy any false hope.
Gotcha.
I may be able to get fixed and give it back to him fixed, and that would feel great. And I definitely, you know, would take the $50 for that. So
right.
The other thing I do is I try not to make people feel stupid, and I try to talk to them on their level. You know, I taught high school, and you had to talk to high school students on their level, and
right.
and so I try to do the same thing. You know, it turns me off when people try to use big terminology around me and impress me. So I never ever do that.
Totally, that's a great tip. Plus it confuses them. And then it makes them not feel like they're friendly with you because they don't understand you. You know, it actually puts a barrier in between the communication.
Right, right. So I remember one of my customers who now is kind of a good friend, but when I first went to his house and started interacting with him, he was like, "Wow, you're just a regular guy." I was like, "What do you expect?" You know, and he just thought some guy would come in and just be talking way over his head
right.
and all this stuff. And people don't like that. So,
I guess they're used to it too. It must be the norm.
Yeah. Maybe they're watching too much of I don't know, Chuck or
that
Big Bang Theory or something. That's what they expect.
Good point. Good point.
So
good stuff so far.
Yeah.
What else do you got?
Well, I do have some challenges, and I just thought I'd run it by you. And one of them is dealing with calls at work, because I do take calls while I'm working.
Yes.
For people who want to, you know, find out if I can help them. And a lot of times they just start going on and on and on. And on one hand, I want to say, you know what? I'm at my real job right now. I cannot talk to you. But on the other hand, I'm thinking, well, how would they know that? Why would they expect to call a business out of the Yellow Pages and not be able to, you know, to talk? So I struggle with that, trying to, because I can't be on the phone very long, you know. But and so I've looked into answering services, actually. I think it was maybe Brian from Britech, or
I think
one of
it
the
was
guys
John from Evernet.co.uk.
Yeah, and he had some kind of sweet answering service deal where it was like a per call thing, you know. And
right.
I just really haven't found anything online that seemed that, you know, comparable to that. But that's kind of what I'm looking for, is something, you know, where my calls can be handled and I you know, won't really get in trouble for being on the phone too much.
Yeah, there is. I know Steve D. You should check up with Steve D. I know he was looking into one, an American one. But being in a shop, it was easy for me. I would just say, bring it in. You could just almost cut them off. I totally got it. Bring it in.
Right.
For you, you're going to them, aren't you?
No, I can have them bring him in. They can bring it right to my shop, right to where I work and come in the front door.
That's what I would say. I would say,
okay.
Acknowledge them. Oh, I totally understand your problem. Bring it in. Tell me all about it. And just get them to bring it in. Because once they're in, you know, you got control of the conversation. You could actually look at their computer and see what's going on with it. And it's a much more advantageous position for you to be in as a computer tech, I think. And it's just a way to get them into action. So I would say bring it in. That would be my pat answer. I don't know any answering services. I wish I did.
Yeah. It's just, you know, if I had some kind of a, you know, friend or relative who had nothing to do, but, you know, maybe they could do it, but I don't know.
Right.
Another challenge I have is customers who they'll hire me to come do the work and they never, ever ask what I charge. And so I sit there and I'm doing the job and I'm thinking, man, I've been here 2 hours. Aren't they wondering how much I charge? And are they going to have a duck when they find out that it's $80 an hour, you know? And so then they ask me, they pull out the checkbook and they ask me, and I almost don't want to tell them because I'm thinking, man, why wouldn't somebody have asked this? I would never hire somebody to come over and do something like that without knowing what I was getting into. So I just wonder if you had any suggestions. How do you do that?
God, it's been a long time for me. But what I would do is just realize the fact that they didn't ask you means that they're willing to pay whatever you say. And just when you do tell them the price, don't say it and cower back. Say it as if that it's the best deal in the world, you know, and just tell them and see what happens. But I would imagine that because they didn't ask, they're not that concerned about it. That would be my impression.
Or they're assuming that it's, you know, 40 an hour or something, you know, comparable to that. That's what I'm imagining that they're thinking, that I'm going to tell them some price, you know, and I'm like 140 bucks or whatever it is. And
yeah, it is. It
I've had one or two customers that, man, they really had a hard time with that.
Oh, you already did. See, I guess if you have customers that are acting that way, again, this is location based. I mean, if all your other competitors are charging 40 bucks an hour and you're charging 80, then maybe they do have an idea that it's going to be cheaper. But
I'm under what other people charge, just a hair. I think
I wish I had better advice for you. I would just keep doing what you're doing. How many?
You know what I do though? What I do, I try to do is if they don't ask, I try to bring it up when they book the job, so that if they have an objection, they can state it right then and there.
Yeah. Is it stated anywhere in like the ad or anything?
No.
No. Okay.
No, I didn't want to do that because, you know, when I started listening to Podnuts, which was just a few months ago, I did not want to, you know, just put a price on my website without knowing really, I hadn't done the research and made a bunch of calls to see where I was.
Right.
Well, I've done that now, and I know that I'm not the cheapest, but I'm definitely not the most expensive. So I'm right in there, I think, where I need to be and where I'm still comfortable saying it's 80 bucks an hour.
Right.
I tried, you know, more than that before, and I just felt so, I just couldn't even stomach it myself. So
I know what you mean.
I had to drop it to what I knew that if I were on the other end of that, I would be okay with it.
Right. That works. That works. I think it works for me.
And it's always good, I think, whenever a computer tech goes to get their car fixed or something like that, and they're given the bill, I think it's I always try to remind myself, okay, this is how my customers feel when I give them my bill.
Right. That's a great way.
I need to really, you know, just always keep that in front of me and make sure I give the service that, you know, merits an $80 an hour charge.
Right. I think it's a great way to be. As far as putting your price on your site, I would only do it if you think it's going to be a draw. You know what I mean? If mm-hmm. the reason I did it is because I knew I was damn low. And when I put it on my site, it handled a lot of the question about what I was going to charge, and they knew what they were getting into when they called me. But it was a draw. I mean, you're supposed to put like benefits and stuff on your website. Well, to me, my price was a benefit, so why not put it on the site? So people do get the wrong idea when I say put your price on the website. But only do it if it's something that's a benefit to you. If you know you're more expensive, then put some other benefit on the site, not your price. Not your price.
Right. Right. And I'm okay with putting the price. I just needed to settle on it first. And it's not real crucial right now because, like I said, I'm not getting a ton of traffic yet. I need to do some tweaking first, and that will happen. But I really feel like I want to do that because I want people to know what they're getting into.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Cool.
So another problem I have is customers who want free phone support. I mean, they call and they want to go into all their, you know, all the issues that they're having with it or whatever, and they have no intention whatsoever of having you fix your computer, hiring you or whatever. They just want, and this happens all the time, not just during my day job, but all the time, they want me to, you know, like they'll have a virus and they're trying to really get it out of me of what to do to get rid of the virus, you know, and I try as best I can to deal with that. But I just, you know, I want to help. The problem is I want to help people. I'm a teacher by nature. And so my natural instinct is to actually help them and walk them through it. But I can't do that because I don't make any money when I do that.
Right.
And it's even tougher if it's a customer that I've already that has already hired me in the past. And they call and they want me to help them out with something. I really want to, but at the same time, I want to be paid for what I do. So,
well, I would look at it from this is how I tackled it. First of all, I would just tell them, bring it in. And they would say, well, how do you do this? I'm like, I'll bring it in. I'll take a look at it. And if they continue to ask, trying to basically tell you how to do it, you could, I've said to guys, look, that's my job. I mean, I'm going to be telling, right. I can't tell you how I do my job or something along those lines. Like, you know, that's what I do here. That's what we do. That's what we get paid for, something like that. And, so you could say something like that. I think it's rude of a customer to try to get they're basically trying to get free information out of you, knowing that you're a business. That's rude of them.
So, I think it's rude. I don't think they're trying to be rude, though. I think a lot of times they're so frustrated. They just want to, you know, they're trying to figure it out themselves.
Right.
And,
but I don't think it's right for them to, if they took a step back and looked at it from your position, they should understand and have like the idea that you are a business. And if they're trying to get all this information out of you to fix their problem that they know you're there to do, then I don't think they really, you should give them that right to do that. So in that case, you could, well, here's another thing you could do. You could basically tell them to do something that you know they're going to have trouble with.
I do. Okay. I say, okay, just boot up in a safe mode and run malware by chance.
Exactly. Okay.
That may fix it. And I know, unless they're really, really lucky, that's not going to fix it. And if it does fix it, more power to them.
Right.
Good for them.
Or if they figured out, if they figured out what you were talking about, then fine. But that's another tactic.
Exactly what I do.
Okay.
So, that's, I don't know. I just struggle with that sometimes, you know, my wife gets upset at me because I'm spending all this time on the phone and, you know, not making any money. And I was bad at that at first, but now I'm getting better at, you know, kind of shutting people down and telling them, you know, bring it in or whatever.
The more you do, the more you do, when you first start a business, you're excited about it, you're enthusiastic, you got to go above and beyond and you help people like this. But, you know, the more you do, the more hardened, I guess you could say you get, but which is not actually not wrong to be hardened because you're in a business. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So people shouldn't just try to get what they can out of you. And sometimes that's their intention. Sometimes it's not. When it is their intention, you have a right, I think, to confuse them.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think sometimes I'm thinking, well, this person, if I help them out, maybe they'll call me, you know, with the next thing, you know, and I highly doubt that they call me back, you know,
right.
They're just looking maybe for the free help or whatever, but,
it's interesting. Good question, though. I like that one.
So, I have some learning experiences that I've picked up along the way.
Okay.
And these are kind of like the don't do this, kind of my don't do this list.
Right.
But just some things as I look back are kind of funny to me, but nothing real bad. But one of them is don't try to figure out a problem in a hostile environment. And the one that stands out in my mind was, this was early on in my computer repair career, and I had just finished a job and it was really time to go home. It was time for dinner and I didn't have another one. And I got a phone call and this lady wanted me to come and she had problems with her video. And I went in there and I already had a headache and I'm sitting down and she's a smoker and her husband's a smoker. And this whole room was filled with smoke and my headache was raging and I'm trying to figure this problem out, and I ended up really not figuring it out, not getting it satisfied, and I was pretty green. It was when I look back, I know exactly what I should have done. It was just a video driver issue.
What are you suggesting then? People do.
I'm suggesting that I should have put that one off. I should have known I need to reschedule this for a time when I'm fresh and I didn't just come off of another job. I was just really hungry for the money, you know, and I went into it and got in there and it was just, I mean, she wasn't hostile. She kind of was upset later because she didn't feel like I took care of it, you know, and I charged her anyway. And, looking back, if I'd done the same job today, and not found the solution, I definitely wouldn't have charged her for it, but I charged her for the time that I was there. And, she still felt like it wasn't fixed. It was like a jittery video as she was scrolling up and down. It just needed an updated driver. And I was just too dumb and green to figure that out. So I ended up having her buy a new video card. And, you know, so she was into it for a little bit of money and she ended up going back to her other guy. And I tried to call her back and even offered her a refund. And she just didn't really even want to talk to me, you know, and I still feel bad about that. But that's really, as I look back over the last 7 years of doing this, that's the only customer that I really feel like they didn't feel like they got the right kind of service from me.
Right. You're gonna have them. It's just gonna happen. So you live and learn in that respect. But what about in that situation, tell them that you got to take it back to your shop? You know, I mean, that might be another option.
Yeah, and I don't remember why I didn't do that. And maybe I really wasn't doing a lot of that at the time. Maybe I was trying to do everything on site. I mean, I remember trying to do virus removals on site.
Yes,
me too. A couple of times. I will never do that now. I never, ever do I refuse. But so it might have been that. I don't remember. But I just remember having, you know, not feeling well.
Yes.
And I felt rushed, and my, you know, family was wanting me home for dinner and stuff. And it was a bad decision. I should not have stopped and tried to tackle that that night.
Good.
So
I'm with you. You got to be like well fed, well rested. And if you could swing it, and you'll do much better if that's the case.
Yeah. So that was one of the first things I learned early on. Another one is, don't trust Acronis archives too much. So what I did was I had this lady's computer, and I don't remember. It was Windows was just all messed up. And so I was going to do a reinstall. And that used to be my solution for everything was reinstall. And, you know, nuke and pave, as they say.
Right.
And I don't do as much of that anymore because I'm learning. And
right.
I'm picking up tons and tons of tools so that I don't have to do that.
Right.
But so I was doing that, and I was using Acronis True. What is it? Acronis
True Image.
True Image Home or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I backed up her hard drive, and this lady was kind of a writer. And so she had this children's book on there and that she had written.
Right.
And I think she was only into about three chapters or something. But anyway, so I went to put the restore the image, and it was corrupted.
Oh, man.
So she lost it, and it was my fault. You know, and so then I realized, you know, I realized what to do is it's okay to make an image, but then I needed to expand that image onto my external drive and actually restore all the files onto my external drive before I wiped her hard drive.
Right. I see what you're
and
saying.
And I, you know, I learned that the hard way, and she, fortunately she wasn't upset at me, and they hired me several times after that.
Good. Well, it must not have been a good book she started.
Yeah, I read the first one. And I'm an English teacher by training, and it was hard to read. It was just fraught with errors. And I tried to offer my services to proofread her next one, and she didn't take me up on that.
Oh, man.
It was rough.
It worked out in the end. You made her.
Yeah, yeah.
She wrote a better book probably this time, second time.
Yeah. So don't just make an archive, you know, with Acronis or whatever, and trust that, because right. Those archive files can get corrupted. And then if they do, and you've already wiped their data,
you're screwed.
You're not in a good shape. So that was that. And don't trust recovery partitions. You know, it took me a while before I realized that recovery partitions can be infected with viruses. And if you keep using the same recovery partition, you're going to keep reinfecting the computer.
Interesting. I didn't know that they were getting infected.
Yeah, I had one that, I had to get on the TeamSpeak and talk to some guys, and they're like, yeah, this was a really bad, it was Steve the Ute that, he's like, oh, I got this. I know what this is, when I was explaining it. And it was a Viroot, kind of a variation of Viroot. And it was on the recovery partition. And so I used, I think I used Kaspersky Rescue CD,
mm-hmm.
and it found a rootkit in there.
Neat.
And so it cleaned it out. And I was able, after that, I was able to use the recovery partition without a problem. But every time I couldn't figure it out, because I would use a recovery partition, and like as soon as I got Microsoft Security Essentials on there, boom, it found it. I'm like, I haven't done anything. How is that possible?
That's great.
And there's a computer I worked on maybe 2 years ago that was doing the same thing. And now that I look back, I realize what it was, you know, like, ding, oh, that's what that problem was.
Right.
And I couldn't figure it out then either, but I didn't have the resources that I have now, you know, to figure that out. So don't always trust a recovery partition to fix your problem.
That's an interesting one. I never encountered that. I used to love recovery partitions.
Oh, I love it. I love it when I get an HP in, you know, and they say they have a virus or something like that. I'm like, oh, it's an HP.
Yeah, right.
So unless it's a laptop, I hate HP laptops.
I don't blame you. Good tip. That's I didn't know that one.
Yeah. And I may not have all the details exactly right there, but that's the gist I got from it was your hard drive is screwed. Your recovery partition is hosed too. You know, this was, you know, from Steve D. So I took his advice and took care of it. So
sounds like good advice.
Yeah, it was good.
Thank you, Steve D.
Yep. Another thing I learned is, I used to partition the customer's hard drive, and I would do like a C drive and a D drive. And
oh, that's a mistake, right?
Yeah, it's a mistake. And because I was doing it for my own purposes, so that if I worked on the computer in the future and they had a virus, I could just redo the C drive with a Cronus or whatever, and I had like an image.
It sounds like a sound rationale, but
yeah, but I tell you, when I realized where it's really a bad idea is I've done this to my boss's computer and also to our labor manager the same way. And I've been able to fix it because I'm right there on site, but they get Outlook going and they've got huge Outlook files,
right?
And they're complaining that computer's slowing down. And I look at the C partition, which I thought was big enough, and it's almost full because they're saving, you know, even though their documents are mapped to the D drive, there's still so much stuff that goes in the C drive, and every time they install a program and every time, and I didn't really set it up so that all of that would be routed to the D drive. So I'm just like, you know, it's way more work to try to solve that problem than it is just to have one big, you know, C drive and everything there and to deal with that. So
you have to, there's just too many opportunities for the customer to use the C drive, and right. Everything defaults to the C drive. You know, even if you do set something up that everything's going to D, there's always going to be something that wants to go on C. It's right. Just, I hate it when I get a computer, like I buy a new computer and has a D drive part. I immediately repartition the drive so it's all one big single. Yeah. So,
and I don't mind if one of those partitions is a tiny little one with a recovery image on it. That's not what I'm talking about.
No. But a data partition is just not a good idea, especially with residential guys.
So the way I fix that, though, is with a program called, I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's like EASUS or EASUS or something.
Yeah, we call it EASUS.
EASUS Partition Manager. And, you know, fortunately, you know, I just waited till an opportunity to jump on there and they didn't need the computer. And I just repartitioned it just to make the C drive just, you know, huge. And that took care of it. So,
yeah, you could do that. Vista and 7 have a partition manager that's better than 1 and XP that can extend drives, but sometimes if you don't get the option for whatever reason, you got to use like an EASUS, which is basically partition magic. So,
and we're stuck on Windows XP on all the computers, you know, at my day job.
Then you need to deal with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, which I like XP. I mean, I really like it. I know it really well, and I haven't done a lot on 7. I've done some on Vista and even less on 7 as far as working on those kind of computers go, but you know, eventually I will be, I'm sure.
Sure. It's going to happen.
So
cool. Anything else?
Yeah. I got more.
All right. More. Bring it on.
Yeah. Another thing I learned that I used to do and I don't do anymore is I used to set up the only wireless security I would set up for a customer is MAC address filtering. And the reason I did that was from personal experience. I had a Wi-Fi set up in my house and I tried the WPA2 security, and I continually was having to retype in the password, and it kept losing the password. Like the laptop would lose it, and I would have to continually type it in. And when I understood MAC address filtering, I was like, "Oh, well, I'll just do that." And then, you know, you're either on the guest list and you're getting into the club, or you're not.
Interesting. I don't even know what it entails.
Well, it's basically every wireless device in the world theoretically has a unique 12-character MAC address. Mm-hmm. MAC have the term MAC there has nothing to do with Macintosh. Right, it's right. I forget what it stands for, but so everyone has that, and so on every wireless device does. Every wireless card in the laptop, even the USB wireless adapters have one.
Okay.
And so you just go into the router to like the Linksys router, and you go into this wireless security, and there's an area for MAC address filtering. It's called different things sometimes, but you go in there and you turn it on, you turn it off. And then there's a place with maybe like 50 blanks where you can type in specific MAC addresses. And so you can say, well, I'm going to enable MAC address filtering. And the ones that I put in here are allowed to connect to my network. So you can say they are allowed, or you can make it a blacklist and say they're not allowed, but I use it, you know, make a whitelist and say they are allowed. And so you put every MAC address in there, and then you just hit okay and save it. And so people maybe that are in your driveway, say with their laptop, and they're trying to war drive or whatever, they'll see that you have a wireless network. It's there. The SSID is broadcast, and they'll see that it's it'll say it's unsecured, but they can't connect.
Really?
And they cannot connect because they're not on that list.
Interesting.
But it's not a super secure way of doing it because you can spoof a MAC address. So for the average guy, it's fine. I don't even know how to spoof a MAC address, but from what I've read, it's really not that all that hard.
Okay.
So for two reasons, I don't do that anymore. One of them is because it's not as secure as like the WPA2 security. But the other reason is that customers, every time they got a new device, maybe their kid got an iTouch or, you know, they got a new laptop or their cousin's in town and has their laptop, none of those can connect because they're not on the MAC address list. And so I get a phone call and I'm having to take 10, 15 minutes to walk over the phone, walk them through adding this device to their MAC address
list. Why don't you just set up WPA then?
I do. Okay. That's why I said I don't do that anymore.
Okay.
So now in my house, that's kind of the way I like it. Which right now, I don't have any security because I just had to reset my router the other day. And I haven't bothered to go in and set the security up again. But it's just not practical to set customers up that way because too many things change. And then, you know, you're getting a phone call for something that simple, you know, whereas if you set up the WPA2 security, it's just a password that they have to type in. So,
yeah, I like it. I mean, it was a great attempt. You know, I mean, it seems like a great solution, it's good to know you can still do that.
Yeah, it's really clean too, because it's not, you know, your connection, you're not jumping through any hoops. You're
right.
Just instantly connected or you're not. it's like it's on or it's off. You're on the guest list or you're not on the guest list. So
that's really cool.
So I still like it, but right. I just don't do it anymore for customers.
Nice.
So. Yeah. Another tip, I guess I have, a lot of these aren't like, they're tips more about how, you know, mistakes I've made, not necessarily specific pieces of software.
Right.
And I'll get into that later, why that's the case. But I don't call customers and tell them their PC is done until it's actually done. And I know I've heard other guys talk about this on PodNuts, but it just happens to me every time when I think it's going to be done and then I run into a problem. And so then I have to call back and say, well, actually, it's not done. Or, you know, they're on their way to my house and I realize it's going to be another half hour before I'm actually done with this.
It's like a natural law for computer repair.
It is.
It's uncanny. Happens every time. It's
right.
There's no avoiding it.
Yep. So that's an easy one. I learned that pretty early on.
That's a good tip.
My wife gets after me, too. She's like, now, is it really done? I'm like, yes, dear, it's done.
That's great.
So. Yeah, she's totally non-techie. So and that's really, I realize the reason that PodNuts is a success is because none of my family or my normal friends want to hear about any of this stuff. So we PodNutsians have to have a place to get all of this stuff.
That's great.
So
good point.
You know, just like I don't want to listen to some of the stuff my wife wants to talk about. She's in nursing school. And she just starts talking to me about all this stuff and my eyes glaze over. I'm like,
seriously?
I'm not interested in medical stuff, but I know she feels the same way about this stuff.
Right. So. I guess that's how you can relate. But yeah, I'm the same way about medical. Forget it.
I think I just bumped my volume or something. So
no, you sound okay.
Okay.
Don't worry about it.
Oh, there we go. Another thing, I've already mentioned this, is under promise and over deliver, especially with like a time frame. So if I think it's going to take me, If I get a computer tomorrow, for example, Tuesday, and it's a virus removal, which I already anticipate getting one, I'm pretty sure I can knock that out Tuesday night, but I don't dare promise that because as soon as I do, my whole world's going to turn upside down Tuesday night and I won't even be able to touch it. So I give myself, you know, I say Wednesday, possibly Thursday at the latest.
Yes.
And if my world turns upside down, Friday. So, and I still feel like that's a lot quicker turnaround than some of the local shops give them. In fact, I know it is. I mean, it's way faster than Best Buy. And plus they won't get their computer back with all their data wiped out, which there's not even Best Buy, but a local shop here. I had a guy bring me his laptop and he had already taken it to a local, I think it's a chain, but I'm not sure. I don't want to say the name, but it wasn't Best Buy. It was a smaller shop. But they did a virus removal for him and they wiped out, they didn't back up any of his data and he lost like 3,000 songs. So he's pretty upset, and but he still had the virus. And what? So he brought it to me. Yeah, this was the one that had the virus on the recovery partition. I said, I know what these guys did. These guys saw there was a recovery partition. They used it. They assumed it was done. They didn't back up his data in the process, and they gave it back to him.
That's a total fail.
And when I explained to him, I said, this is what happened. And I actually used, what did I use? I have a Linux machine over here. And I hooked his hard drive up to a Linux machine, and I used a program. And I'm not going to be able to think of it on the spur of the moment, but it's one that's supposedly they used to use for kind of forensics data recovery.
Right.
And I got a lot of his stuff back. I mean, I got, I think, 1,600 songs back.
Oh, he probably loved you.
Oh, I was a hero. And so my bill went from $80, and he offered to pay me more to $120. Because I did the virus removal and I got all that stuff back for him.
Nice.
But he told me, he's like, he said, basically, with that other shop, I paid them to erase my music.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, well, you know, at least that's exactly what happened, you know. So
it's amazing. It's amazing how he didn't go back to, I mean, it's amazing how customers just kind of suck it up sometimes, you know?
Like, yeah, but you know what? That shop is going to get a lot of free advertising that they don't want. So, and he will definitely use me again, and he'll tell his friends about me. So I took care of him.
Good man.
But, so that was that. And, don't return a PC to a customer without payment, like on the promise of payment, because although they may do it, this one that I have in mind, it's really the only one I've done this with. And it's actually this guy that, has the Toshiba laptop that I, you know, has the BIOS problem, but, and I know he's on a fixed income and so on, but I had fixed his computer before Christmas. I picked it up. He told me he'd be able to pay me after the first of the year. I really want to help this guy out. I didn't get paid till sometime in February, and I had to go to his house a couple of times. And when I got there, he wrote me the check for $10 less than it was supposed to be. So I had to make him, you know, fix that. And, I'm still trying to, you know, be nice to this guy and stuff. And, just the fact of the matter is, this time when I picked it up, I made him give me a post-dated check, you know, and he was okay with that. But, and even though that's not a grand, you know, a slam dunk, I still feel a whole lot better about doing anything for him knowing I have this post-dated check.
Right. Right.
You know, and maybe that's not the best way to handle it, but with this particular situation, you know, that's how I decided to do it.
Yeah, it's better than nothing. But yeah, I see having the shop, you put so much more control in on all these things. I mean, you have their computer when you're in the shop. So
right.
If they want it, they have to pay you. And there's a lot of benefits I like about the shop having that. But still, like when I was doing on site, I wouldn't leave until I got paid. You know,
right.
there was some instances, you know, where you kind of get talked out of it somehow. I mean, it's up to you what to do, but you got to gauge it by how reliable the customer seems, you know, like just what you want to do. I mean, if this guy,
I had worked for him before though, maybe before Christmas, and he paid me, you know, right away.
Right.
So, and he said, the thing is, he's on a fixed income and he really wants his computer, you know, working, which I understand, he's homebound, but you know, stuff comes up and he has, and I suddenly dropped to the bottom of his priority list. You know, and he doesn't have the money. And, you know, finally I stopped by enough times and, you know, he coughs it up, but right. I hate having to, I don't want to have to do that. I shouldn't have to do that. And I won't do it anymore.
Yeah, that's good. So, you know, my philosophy on this is people are usually much, much more capable of making things happen than they think. So,
oh yeah.
You know what
oh,
I mean? Yeah. If they're going to put you in a position where you're at like a disadvantage or you have to wait, if they're forced into a situation, they're going to come out with a solution. You know what I mean? It's like, if somebody has to come up with some money or they're going to die, they'll come up with the money.
Yeah. So people will find a way to do the things that are ultimately important to them.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So if it's not, you don't have to feel like I'm cutting this guy a break. You know, this is general to everybody is what I'm saying. You don't have to feel like I have to cut this guy a break, because somebody out there is not going to cut him a break. And that guy who didn't cut him a break is getting paid because this guy's going to come up with the money somehow. So it's like you're doing a service. You should get compensated. Even if people are in tough situations, they can come up with the money. They will come up with the money. So you can't don't be too victimized by that is what I'm trying to say.
Right. I mean, he's got a cell phone, you know, he's got other little luxuries that he's somehow finding the money for.
Exactly.
So that's that. And, another mistake I almost made was putting Dropbox on my bench computer. And I'll tell you why that almost was the ruin of me is because I had this, Viroot that had infected my thumb drive and I didn't realize it until it was almost too late. But I had a Dropbox on my bench computer. Well, my Dropbox account syncs to my computer upstairs in my kitchen, and it syncs to my computer at work, which is networked to all the computers at work.
Wow.
Right. So you see where I'm going with this.
Oh,
and when
man.
I realized I had plugged my thumb drive into my bench machine, but only when it was in safe mode. So... I realized I almost infected all the computers at my work, and it would have been my own fault, and I would have had to fix it on my own time.
It's like disaster averted.
Yes. Yeah, so I actually do have Dropbox on my bench machine right now, but you can do selective syncing on your Dropbox. And so I only have one certain folder syncing on my bench machine, and it's just documents. So I think I'm okay, but I still think just to be safe, I'm going to even blow that away. And
yeah,
not.
I would.
It's like, man, I almost hosed myself.
That is a close call. It's interesting too. Dropbox can be used as a little virus delivery device.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And this Viroot thing, I mean, Steve D knows way more about it than I do, but it is by far the nastiest virus I've ever dealt with.
Yeah. I remember it was Viroot was the reason why in my shop we started using write protected flash drives.
And I can't find one. I've been looking for probably a good week diligently to find a good one. I can't find one.
There's one from a company called Kangaroo. That's with a U at the end. Carrie Holzman gave us a list of, he went on CNET and just, he actually used the filter on CNET because write protected switch on USB drives is a filter you could use for CNET, and so he found a bunch on there. Hey, worst case scenario, you just buy a card reader. This is what we did, and an SD card, because all SD cards have the lock switch. And
that's brilliant. Yeah. Duh. Okay,
yeah.
I got you.
Yeah, and that's cheap.
A great
idea. That's a cheap way of doing it.
Okay. Yeah, and I even went on to Micro Center. I heard your interview with I think the VP of something.
You're
at
taking
Micro Center.
You're taking us back now.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, they didn't have them in Micro Center, so.
Yeah, they kind of stopped making them. A lot of retail shops don't have them. You got to get them online, or just do the SD card thing. That's just easy way.
Right. That's a great idea. I have one last, I guess, learning experience, and this is more of a positive than a lot of them have been negatives, like, you know, don't do this.
Right.
Don't do what I did. Well, I do have two more. Let me do those first. Don't feel like you have to be able to solve every problem. It is okay to give up. And that's really hard for me to do because in the back of my mind, there's this little voice telling me I can fix any computer problem.
Yes.
But I really can't. And so I have to know, and it's tough to know when to give up. And especially, you know, if it's somebody that you know them or you've done business with them before, you really want to be the hero in their eyes. But there comes a time where, you know, everybody has their knowledge limit and they need to be able to give up. And, you know, it's at that point, I mean, you have to do something else. Maybe, you know, I don't always know what to do at that point. That's tough to do when I can't deal with it. But, you know, I think we can't beat ourselves up and feel like we have to fix everything or,
right.
you know, we're no good or something.
Good tip. I'll add a little bit to it because I've been in situations where I spent way too much time. I wasn't figuring it out and I did give up. But I think a lot of the times when I did that, I always said to them, I have to go home and research this. And I'm just trying to remember. I've used that line many times, I think. And I would go home and just Google the hell out of it, or I would take their system with me. And I'm like, I just don't have the answer right now. I have to research this, or I know a guy that knows I have to talk to about this or something. And just Google the heck out of it and then try. And then I think finally, if that doesn't work, and I just throw in the towel. But I think I have used the line a lot of times. I got to research this. So,
lately a good line is, well, you need to upgrade to Windows 7. So, you know, it's Vista. That's why, because it's Vista.
So easy to blame Vista.
I did have one of those that I actually had to kind of give up on. But yeah. And I do think that if they went to 7, it would probably fix it. But I couldn't guarantee that to them. But
yeah.
So the only problem I have with the hard time I have with referring it out to a guy is then that's going to cost me money. And I really I want to keep all the money to myself. I don't want to, you know, make just a little bit on it because I have to have somebody else do it and I have to pay them to do it.
No, I usually didn't have a guy. I think I would just say that.
Okay.
And then I think I probably came home, talked about it on Podnuts Daily and see what you guys had to say about it.
Right. Well, that actually leads me to my next point. And this is the positive, which is, this is what I did. I don't know if this is good for everybody, but my suggestion is find a good local tech shop and build a relationship with them. And I did this. There's a shop in my town that's, you know, it's not too far from me. And it's local. It's not a chain or anything. And the guys are really nice, really professional. But I buy from them whenever I can, if I have to have something right away or whatever. And, you know, it's not a day when they're not open there. I think they're closed on Sundays. But I try to buy from them. I try to share tips with them when I go in, if I find something really cool that can help them. And they've helped me the same way. They've given me, copies of OEMs that I needed because I didn't have them when I was first starting. I didn't have any.
Right.
And they helped me out. And I try to send customers their way. If there's something that, you know, I really don't have time to do or it's over my head. A lot of the laptop stuff, I'm developing a relationship with a guy there named Javon, who he's a laptop guru. And I'm not at all. I mean, I just bought the laptop repair videos and I'm working my way through them, but I'm not about to experiment on a customer's computer and see if I can figure it out.
Right,
I'm trying to work with Javon and, you know, I'll make a little bit. I'm not going to make as much as he makes for sure. But I think that's a good thing to do is find a local tech shop and just kind of build a rapport with them so that, you know, you scratch their back and they scratch yours.
I think it's a great idea. Because then if you have stuff that each other needs, you got like this reciprocal relationship going on. I did the same thing, not same thing, different, but still formed a relationship with a good on-site guy. When I had my shop, I didn't have any on-site guys. So I contracted out an on-site guy, and that's Mike Picho, who you guys probably know from past episodes. And that was a great relationship. You know, he did all my on-site work. And I learned a lot from Mike, and hopefully Mike learned some stuff from what I was doing. But it is good to not make enemies if you could help it, make friends and network and relationships, and that it works out good. Good tip.
Yeah. I mean, not everybody has to be your enemy unless it's Best Buy, but not anybody, everybody has to be your competitor. I mean, they're your competitor, but there's, you know, we're in a town of, I don't know, 400,000, in this group of towns. I mean, there's plenty of market share to go around, you know, there's plenty of elbow room. So there's no reason to feel like I have to keep all my secrets to myself and, you know, I can't help anybody else. You know, I don't see the need to be that way.
I'm with you.
But cool. Anyway, those are my learning experiences. I have one more list of my favorite resources and that's about all I have. So I don't know how much time we have left, but
hit us up with your list and then we'll do emails.
Okay. My favorite resource is right now is definitely Podnuts, which is, you know, that kind of goes in all different directions, but, you know, I like Podnuts because it's, you know, we can't, like I said before, we can't talk to our wives and our normal friends about this stuff. And the other thing is for me, it's a traveling education because in my vehicle, I have a jack, an audio jack, and I just plug my iTouch right in there. And on the way to work and the way home, I'm listening to Podnuts and just soaking up as much as I can. So
awesome. I think most of our listeners are in cars when they hear the show. That's what
Yeah.
Great. Man, thanks for saying that.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm at home. I got three kids and a dog, and one of the kids has an electric guitar, and you know, it's just too chaotic here to try to learn. So, so that and TeamSpeak is huge. I mean, it's just I couldn't believe how ready and willing and able those guys are on TeamSpeak to help out. Which, you know, I don't know if you want to explain what that is to those who are the uninitiated, but
Yeah, well, I think it's getting to the point now where I really have to start putting some stuff on the site, because this there's more and more people going in there all the time, and it's such a great resource. And what it is if you guys want to actually talk to the Podnuts community, they meet in a chat room, but it's not chat where you type. It's chat where you talk. It's awesome. I have my control button is my microphone button. So whenever I want to say something in a TeamSpeak chat room, I just press my control button, say what I want, let go of my control button. It's that easy. Right. But so you basically meet up in a little chat room here. All the guys are in there. And whoever's in there, they're just having a conversation. You could just chime in, ask questions, or give information. It's called. It uses a client called TeamSpeak. It's a small little application. You go to teamspeak.com. You download it, start it up, run it, and you put in the proper credentials, and you're in the room. And it's just that easy, and it's something that everybody should do. The credentials, should we say the credentials? It's, what's the name? What's the server? It's podnuts.ts, instant TS. I got to find it.
Off the top of my head, I don't know.
It's posted in the forums. Do a search in the forums for TeamSpeak. You will get the credentials you need. You just got to put in a URL and a port. What is it?
I think it's in the general discussion area of the Podnuts forum.
Okay.
So, I might have it on here, but I don't want to spend too much time looking for it. But I mean, if I could figure it out, believe me, you know, it's not that hard.
Yeah.
So
let me pull
that's
it up.
Good.
I have it right
That's
here.
Really good. Okay.
It's Podnuts. And when you download TeamSpeak and you try to log in, the address is podnuts.instantts.net port 4201, unless they changed it. So that's the credentials. Cool.
Okay. So that's huge. And probably in the last 10 jobs that I've done, I got information on how to, you know, things I couldn't overcome from TeamSpeak. So they just helped me overcome some of those hurdles, and it was really helpful.
Awesome.
Another resource is the laptop repair videos. I've bought those, and I'm working my way through them, and they're just really, really informative. Like I said, I'm not ready to jump into that yet, but I want that knowledge. I'm hungry for that knowledge, and these are just, they're really well done, and I can follow them. I can't stand something where I can't follow it because they start, you know, using terms. Whenever they make assumptions, you know, on some of these videos or whatever, I get lost, and I'm just not going to, you know, track with that.
Right.
So
well, glad.
I like the videos.
Thanks.
And Lalo's better PC tech videos.
Yes.
Huge. You know, it helped me get set up so I can log in remotely to customers' computers, and it's very painless for them with Log Me In. And the other thing was, I think, driver packs. I couldn't believe I felt like I'd struck gold with driver packs.
Really?
I have always done, you know, the searching, going to the vendor website. I've done that for 6-7 years.
Right.
Never knew there was something called driver packs. I did use a program called Double Driver.
Right.
Okay, but I don't know if anybody else uses Double Driver, but there were so many times where I would do the whole reinstall and realize I'd forgotten to use Double Driver.
Nice.
And so I didn't have them. So Double Driver just makes a really quick and dirty backup of all their drivers. You have to do it ahead of time.
Right. Exactly.
Whereas driver packs, I thought this is it's a magic disc. I have a magic disc now, and it's awesome.
That's great.
So, you know, Lalo helped me out with that, and with his videos, and the WSUS, that's huge. It saves me so much time. See, what happened is I discovered Podnuts I don't know, a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And then my knowledge and my resources just leaped forward. I mean, they just catapulted forward. I've learned so much more in the past 2 months that is helping me become a more efficient tech, and not having to spend so much time actually in front of the screen where I can just start a process, walk away, come back, and it's done.
Dude, that's so awesome.
Oh, it's great. Ninite.com. I couldn't believe that when I saw it. It's the best thing ever. So that, you know, just to do all those automatic installs and not have to click next, 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 or right. I agree, or right. any of that stuff. So that's one of my favorites. Linux Mint Julia. The whatever flavor that is, Linux Mint Julia. I have a Linux machine over here. I just started getting into that and understanding it, but it's so cool because there's so many things you can do on it. you know, that you can't do on Windows. Right. And you can, it's just a very useful tool. So Linux is cool. And the live CDs, all the different live CDs that you can use, like Trinity Rescue Kit and some of those. So that's kind of, I don't know, those are the big ones for me.
Nice. Dude, awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome stuff, man. I think you did great, man. You brought so much good stuff. Impressive, impressive.
So like I said, a lot of this, a lot of my favorite tools, they're stuff that all the guys who listen to Podnuts really have probably already heard of, because, you know, that's where I heard about them, was on Podnuts. But I think, you know, right now what I'm trying to, I guess, bring to the table is just some of my experiences and, you know, learn from my mistakes.
No, it's great stuff. I mean, and even the tools. Look, you didn't listen to every single episode of Podnuts, right? So those tools might have been mentioned before. If we would, if I stopped people from mentioning tools that were already mentioned, then you would have never heard them. So the repetition of tools, I have no problem with. I don't care if somebody comes on and tells their favorite tool every time, because it needs to get dinged in. So that's right. It's great. It's great stuff.
Right.
All right. Should I read some emails?
Yeah, I'm out of material. So
okay. All right, we got two emails here. This first one's from Nick. He goes, "Hey, Steve, ready for a long story?" Okay, here we go. Let me take a breath. He goes, "I recently had a customer call me about her family computer being full of viruses, and I said I would take a look at it, and she brought it over to my place the next day. The first thing I did was cleaned out all the dust on the inside of the case and made sure all the cables were secure before booting up. It's something I always do before. I learned from one of my great teachers." I hope he's talking about me or somebody really in Podnuts. Anyways, when I hooked up the system, it took me like 45 minutes. When I hooked up the system, it took, 45 minutes? So after waiting for it to boot, there was so much spyware and viruses on this computer that causing it to be so incredibly slow. There was actually like 3 or 4 different antivirus programs installed. I couldn't do anything. So I restarted the system and booted up in safe mode, and I was actually able to back up all of her 4,000 photos and a few documents. And they really thanked me for that, because they brought it to Geek Squad and they couldn't even get the photos and documents off. It took me about an hour to get the photos off. After that, I slammed the XP disk in the CD tray. They wanted XP back on it. So I booted from the XP disk, and while I was trying to run setup, it gave me a blue screen of death. I thought it might have been from the disk. I cleaned the disk, slammed it back in the tray. Same problem. After a few attempts, I gave up and I slammed. He does a lot of slamming of discs into the tray here.
That might be a problem.
After a few attempts, I gave up and I slammed in the Ultimate Boot CD I had laying around and did a destructive reformat of the hard drive, and it took around an hour and a half to complete. After it completed successfully, I took the disc out and booted the system back up without any discs, and it said there was no operating system found. Good. I was happy it said that. That's what most new hard drives say when you first boot to them.
Yep.
So once again, I slammed the XP disk back in the tray and booted up again. And this time it booted up XP and it installed successfully. This time it installed XP successfully. After XP installed successfully, I began installing updates, and some of the software they wanted was like Microsoft Office and Firefox. I installed Microsoft Security Essentials and optimized the system and ran CCleaner when I was done. I don't know why you would have to do that if you just reinstalled, but...
Yeah, what would be on there?
Right. I also reset System Restore. They only had 256 meg of RAM installed, so I installed another 256 meg chip I had lying around that I will never use, so I gave it to them. You gave it to them. Okay. Anyway, I charged them $100 to do this. I only charged $25 an hour and took me 4 hours to complete. Okay, I told Nick after I read this, I said, "You charge too little," but let me just finish his email and then we'll get to that.
Yeah.
I called them back and said it was done, and her husband picked it up and she thanked me a few days later, and it was so much more faster. I was happy. A couple weeks later, she calls back saying there's more viruses on the computer. So he does a facepalm, he says, and said, "I will be happy to look at it again. I got it back to my place, and luckily this time I didn't have to restore the whole operating system. It ended up being some spyware junk they got installed from one of their kids, and I managed to clean up the system and made sure there was no more spyware and viruses, and there wasn't. This was nice and clean. I did install SpyBot Search and Destroy to hopefully protect them from this problem again. I also did a system restore again so they couldn't go back only to the date I fixed everything. I charged him another $50 because it only took me about an hour and a half. I called her back up and said it was done and said to keep an eye on her kids while they are on the computer. Make sure they don't download any of those games or software that they think they need. It's been a few months and she hasn't had any problems yet. She's happy. I'm happy. Well, Steve, hope you enjoy my very long computer story, Nick. Nick, that's a good story.
Yeah.
It's a good story. But you charge too little. And I know I said that to you, and you say, you know, the economy where you live is awful, and for families that don't have much money, I thought I'd do a good deed and not charge a lot, you know, to help them out, because I know how it feels not to have a lot of money. So anyway, that's cool, man, but you got to look at it this way. If you're in the computer repair business, you got to feed yourself too. You know, I mean, if you want to do good deeds and do this as a hobby, that's cool, but I can't recommend that if you're doing this for a business, charging so little. So it sounds like you did a good job on this machine, but my only out point I see in what you did is I would charge a little bit more, man. Maybe a lot more. And I don't know. I haven't used SpyBot in a while, but people have been talking about that again.
You know, I'm not a big fan of it, just because there's a process that last time I used it, it would have this kind of a startup type of a scan that just seemed to take forever. And I don't really want to wait for my computer that long to start up. I mean, I don't mind if it's running, if Windows is up and running and there's a scan running.
Right.
But I, you know, if I can't even get to the desktop because the scan has to finish that takes 45 minutes. No, thank you.
Yeah.
So I just kind of abandoned SpyBot Search and Destroy a while ago.
That's good to know. I mean, it always comes back in a small revival, but then I don't know if it's coming back that strong.
Maybe it's better now. Maybe that doesn't do that anymore.
I'm not sure. I haven't used it forever. But Nick, I sell antivirus, you know, Microsoft Security Essentials is not that great from what I understand. So I was selling Norton out of my shop for like an extra $35. That, of course, it's not going to stop everything, but it might've stopped some of the things their kids were trying to do. So there's a good little upsell if you want to sell them an antivirus. Okay. Next message. What? No, you're going to say something?
No. Nope.
Okay. Next one. And this is the last one, is from Rich. He goes, "Hey, Steve, this is Rich from Cyber CPU Computer Repair. First, I would like to say thanks for a great podcast. I listen to him in my car." See, I knew people listen to him in their car. "Every day, traveling between customers' houses. This message is regarding Podnuts Daily 305 with Crazy Jason. And I hope Jason doesn't mind I call him that, but it fits the bill. I have to say, he's a great guy. He gives a lot of great tips, but I like calling him crazy for some reason. He says, I have to say his tips of free alternatives were great, but I have to add something." And we did mention this on Podnuts Pro too. He mentioned that he set up a few clients to use dummy terminals with a single copy. Oh man, I hit the wrong button here. With a single copy of Windows and Office. That way, Microsoft's licensing works is not based on it being run on only one computer. Basically, he's trying to say he has to have licenses for each concurrent connection. It does not matter if he only has the operating system running on a single machine. Each seat needs to have their separate license. This is why Microsoft does not allow concurrent connections with RDP, which is Remote Desktop Protocol, I think that's what it means, to their desktop operating systems, and requires seat licensing for their server operating systems. Don't get me wrong. It's a great tip, and it would save a company a ton of money in hardware, but he still needs to provide licenses for Windows and Office to each person using the system. By not providing a license to each user, he takes the risk of not only him getting in trouble with Microsoft, but also his clients. If Microsoft ever did a license audit with one of his clients, he could be held responsible. So he brought up a solution of using these dummy terminals. And apparently, Jason, you have to use separate licenses. So, that way Microsoft, the way Microsoft's licensing works is not based on it only being run on one computer. He has to have licenses for each concurrent connection. It does not matter if he only has the operating system running on a single machine. That's what I tried to say the first time, but messed it up. Rich, thank you very much for the email, and that's a good tip. Appreciate it. And I think that's pretty much it for today. Brian, it was awesome having you on.
Well, thanks for having me again. I had a lot of fun. So
good.
I'm pretty excited about coming on tonight.
Great. I sincerely hope that you will sign up in the future, right? You know where to do it.
I do.
Cool.
I do. So.
And if you can't do a Wednesday, let me know again, same way you did this time.
Yep.
Awesome.
Great.
Awesome. And everybody else who is watching, listening, streaming, probably in your car, want to say thank you for listening, and that's going to be it for Podnuts Daily for today. We will see you guys next time. Music for Podnuts Daily provided by Evan King at purevolume.com/Evan King.